Welcome to ACC Nation Podcast. On board, Will Ogenin, and I'm Jim Quist. And as we always point out, family comes first. Xavion is at swimming lessons with his son. He'll join us next week. Coming up, our special guest is Michael Hunter of ACC Basketball Report. You won't want to miss that. But first, ACC football finished off the regular season with makeup and bowl-eligible games. NC State rolled over ECU, and Virginia Tech extended their streak of eligibility with a win over Marshall. Clemson laid claim to yet another ACC football championship. They had a 42-10 win over Pitt Saturday night. Over in the SEC, Alabama climbed out of a hole to pull off a win against Georgia. In the Big Ten, Northwestern made it entertaining. However, Ohio State came out on top. NCAA Women's College Cup pitched, hey, it's two ACC teams, North Carolina against Florida State. We'll have that story this week at accnation.net. USCHO ice hockey rankings. Notre Dame men, they're at 8. Boston College women at 4. NWCA wrestling rankings. NC State, Virginia Tech, North Carolina, Pitt, they all make the top 25. CSCAA swimming and diving rankings. 7 men's teams and 6 women's teams from the ACC make the top 25. As we often point out, early season polling can be a mishmash until the real team begins to emerge or a coach finds a more effective pairing of players to unveil in January. We're seeing some of the reasons why rankings can be misleading. Duke's lost, North Carolina dropping 2 recently, Virginia Tech isn't immune, neither is Clemson, and certainly not NC State or Miami. The biggest red flag losses are with Miami, Rutgers, and Yale, and certainly not to be overlooked are the Tar Heels falling to Texas and Michigan. We're going to talk about this and a lot more as we welcome our special guest, Michael Hunter, owner of ACC Basketball Report. Be sure to subscribe to his podcast. Michael is also a contributing writer to the Notre Dame-centric site SlapTheSign.com and Georgia Tech sports site GTSwarm.com. We appreciate you joining us, Michael.
Hey, I appreciate you guys having me on today.
Hey, before we jump into specifics, let's get your take on the overall picture of basketball. Talk to us about how college basketball looks so far.
I've been supremely entertained this year. Sometimes I hit a little bit of a lull when I go outside the ACC. But this year, I think that the entire landscape of basketball is just littered with really good teams from West Coast, East Coast, Deep South, even up to the Mountain West. I do think that we have kind of a concentrated upper class going on right now. When I was on with Tony Patelis last week, I said that Duke, Gonzaga, Virginia, UNC, and Kansas were kind of the cream of the crop. And I think you can certainly think that Michigan is up there after they've beaten both Villanova and UNC in the past couple weeks. So I think right now those are the clear top 6 teams in the country. But as far as that tier number 2, it is just chock full of really good teams from all over the country, from all kinds of different conferences.
You know, everyone wants to talk about Duke. They want to talk about, you know, literally everything. What Zion Williamson had for breakfast this morning, you know, what Cam Reddish is doing in class, whatnot. But let's talk about the general weakness of this team. It feels like kind of got a little bit exposed in the Maui tournament with the Auburn and ultimately the Gonzaga game, where it felt like they didn't really overcome some adversity that went their way. What do you think is the team's weakness?
Well, I think right now, and it's the same weakness that we thought before coming into the season, overall, just their shooting, their ability to shoot the ball from 3. You know, right now, RJ Barrett shooting the ball 32-33% from deep. Last I knew, Zion Williams was like 2 for 12 on the season from 3. Right now, Cam Reddish is probably their most consistent 3-point shooter. And he's, you know, he's an NBA shooter for the most part. I expected a little bit more from Alex O'Connell, who's shooting at a pretty good clip, but still only made 9 on the year. They're making about 8.5 as a team per game. You know, I think if they run into a team, they can slow them down and make them play in the half court and keep them from out on the break and getting easy baskets and those momentum shifting dunks that Zion is so prone to do, then they have a shot, which I can't wait for Virginia to match up with Duke and see how, you know, the senior-led, very experienced team at Virginia handles this, you know, these young kids that want to get out on the break and make the spectacular plays And, you know, one team wants to run, the other team wants to slow it down. As far as tempo goes, Duke is the 43rd fastest team in the country, and Virginia is second to last at 353. So the contrast in styles, I'm psyched to see Duke and Virginia. But, you know, if Duke's going to win that game, they're going to have to play with some size. They're going to have to play in the half court, and they're going to have to make some threes.
So let's move over to Clemson for a moment here. And they have suffered a couple of losses in a row, one to Creighton, who gave Gonzaga a pretty good game yesterday, was in it most of the way. And to Nebraska, I thought the Nebraska game was a little more of a surprising loss, because I felt like Clemson, the better team on their home court, should have won. Granted, I think Nebraska might be an NCAA tournament team, but do you think there's any concern for Clemson after back-to-back losses like this?
No. Like you said, I would rather see Clemson protect their home court. I do absolutely think that Nebraska is a tournament team. I've actually voted for them in the poll that I'm involved in for three straight weeks. Now they're 20 through 25, but you know, they got a trio of players in Glenn Watson, James Palmer, and Isaac Copeland, who, I mean, that's one of the best trios in the Power Six. You know, Copeland was on that night, and for some reason, you know, Clemson just kind of couldn't get it rolling. Marcus Reed had, you know, a moment where he got a little bit hot, but then he kind of faded. He had a bad charge. And, you know, just Clemson didn't quite get it rolling. Now, as far as Creighton goes, I mean, Creighton gave Gonzaga all they could handle yesterday. They beat a very good Georgia State team, and actually by beat, I mean, they destroyed them. And, you know, they also got a win over Montana, which is a team that you're going to see in the Big Dance in March as well. So I'm not concerned yet. I think Clemson may have been a little bit overvalued coming into the season. I think that the loss of Gabe DeVoe was possibly a little bit understated. I mean, he did everything for that team last year as far as the way he shoots the ball and the volume of points that he puts on the board. You know, you got guys that are breaking into new roles, and when you start playing that quality competition, some of your weaknesses are exposed. Ultimately, I think Clemson is going to be fine. I think they're going to be in the dance. I think they've always finished in the top eight in the ACC.
All right, so Pitt has been a hot mess the last few years. So let's get your thoughts on the turnaround and their hot start to this season.
You know, I'm typically a guy who, I'm not going to watch Duke play Stetson, but I will watch every Pitt game just to see how they improve and see how they compete. And I think this team is clearly bought into what Jeff Cable wants to do right now. And I'm really impressed with what I'm seeing. They play really hard. They're a small team, but they play with a lot of intensity. They play with a lot of energy. And if you watch them play, they have a kid, a true freshman, named Xavier Johnson, who was a player that was ranked in the 300s by most recruiting services. He's currently averaging 16 points, 5.5 assists, 4.3 rebounds. And regardless of the competition you're playing, as a true freshman, that's impressive. They also have a kid that was their alpha dog last year, and Jared Wilson Frame, who was very inefficient last season and started to heat up a little bit towards the end of the season. But this year, he's coming off the bench. He's actually averaging more points in less minutes, and he's shooting about 48% from three after being a career 34% shooter. So this is a team that's made up of JUCOs and transfers and freshmen, and what they've done is they've kind of melded together. And Capel has sold them. He's got them playing hard. They're very confident right now. That game against St. Louis was pretty impressive for such a young team to come down, make free throws, and get that win on a neutral site. And I've been very impressed with this so far.
Well, we haven't held off on expressing our disappointment with Danny Manning this year, Michael. Things really aren't looking that much better this year at Wake Forest. Is this his last year at the helm?
I mean, I think if you want the college basketball world and everybody to take you seriously, I think it has to be. I mean, you're in Jeff Buzdelic territory right now with Danny Manning. He's not any better than the guy that most Wake Forest fans blame for ruining their program. And he's actually, you know, Buzdelic did this with very little talent. Manning is doing it with Burger Boys, with McDonald's All-Americans, with top 50 guys, 4 or 5-star guys. And yesterday they drop a game to Richmond. You know, they drop a game to Houston Baptist earlier, the week before. But, you know, I think I don't know his contract situation. I don't know his buyout, or else I'd be able to say a little bit more conviction. But I think it has to be Danny Manning last season, or else, you know, eventually, if you keep losing with these recruits and you don't put them in the NBA, eventually those recruits are going to stop coming. And if they get into that situation with his coaching acumen, with no players, with no talent, Wake Forest would be in a heap of trouble. So I think this really has to be his last season. I would be shocked if it wasn't.
So let's switch over. Speaking of recruiting, let's switch over to a team that's near and, depending on the day, dear to your heart, Georgia Tech. Now, Josh Pastner's had his issues, especially in the class of 2019, with recruiting. He's swung and missed a lot. And what is it, and why is he struggling so much with this 2019 class?
You know, there's a lot of theories on that. Georgia Tech is a program that I'm probably plugged into more than any other program in the ACC. You know, a lot of people want to point at the academics. You know, in order to go to Georgia Tech, you're going to take 3 or 4 years of calculus. You know, in order to go to Georgia Tech, you have a limited number of majors that you can choose from. You know, in order to go to Georgia Tech, you got to have a certain GPA from high school. You got to have certain test scores. And, you know, all of that is fine. The other thing is Georgia Tech is the Rutgers of the ACC right now. Okay, they're the DePaul of the ACC right now. People don't remember Kenny Anderson and Dennis Scott. They don't remember Stephon Marbury. You know, they don't know, really, for the most part, that this team went to the Final Four in the championship game against UConn in 04. These kids were, you know, 3 or 4 years old when that happened. You know, the only thing they know right now is the end of the Paul Hewitt era and the Brian Gregory era and now the Pastner era. Now, Pastner, I think, is a better coach than the other two combined. But as far as recruiting goes, you got to go to class, you got to have test scores, and that significantly reduces their ability to recruit quality players. And then, you know, I think the loss of Daryl Berry at the beginning of last year was a huge blow to this program. And I think that the Daryl LeBerry firing will ultimately be the undoing of the Josh Pastner. I firmly believe that he was a guy that was incredibly plugged into the Atlanta scene. He's the reason that Michael DeVoe is at Georgia Tech right now, who was the highest recruit they've had since 2012, Robert Carter. And, you know, the reasons that he was fired, I thought, were ridiculous. And that hasn't really been released yet, so we're just going to leave it at that. But, you know, Tavares Hardy going to Loyola, Maryland, He was their scouting report guy. He was their game plan guy. He was a really good basketball mind. And without those two guys, I think Georgia Tech's going to continue to struggle. And you're seeing it now. They're 0-9 or 0-10 on guys that they've had on campus for official visits for the 2019 class.
Oof, that's rough, man. So what's going on at Notre Dame? They're notably a pretty good three-point shooting team. But this year, they're struggling from three-point range. I think they're, 31% from three this year. What's going on there?
You got two guys that are upperclassmen that have been, you know, alpha dogs, or they're supposed to be this year, and Rex Kluger and Temple Gibbs. And, you know, Gibbs kind of took over the point guard role with the graduation of Matt Farrell. And actually, they're actually currently 255th in the country at 31.5% from three. And, you know, Gibbs, having to handle the ball instead of being able to play off the ball, I think kind of prohibited him from being as effective as he would like. Rex Kluger played terribly through the first 5 or 6 games, and he finally busted out recently, and he's been playing pretty decent the last couple of games. Then you got everybody else is freshmen. You know, Prentice Hubb is a freshman. Nate Leshefsky is a freshman. Dane Goodwin, freshman. Robbie Carmody, freshman. DJ Harvey's coming off a serious knee injury. And, you know, they've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 guys that mostly play on the perimeter that are supposed to be able to shoot the ball. Unfortunately, injuries, transfers, things like that. I think this team's still getting to know each other, and the last couple of games they've played a little bit better, and I think they'll continue to improve as these freshmen get more game minute experience and more experience on the court. You know, as Prentice Hubb starts to take over that point guard role permanently, and Gibbs gets to get off the ball and run off some curls, run off some fades, run off some screens, I think you're going to see that three-point percentage come up drastically as the season progresses.
We're listening to ACC Nation podcast, and our special guest today is Michael Hunter of ACC Basketball Report. Do Tar Heel fans, Michael, have a reason to be frustrated like they usually are every year with Roy Williams?
Yeah, I hear this. You know, I live in the Triangle, so I hear this stuff, this blasphemy, I guess, if you will, that Roy Williams is a great recruiter but not a great coach. And, you know, maybe as far as in-game adjustments, that may be true, but you don't win 3 NCAA titles by being a bad coach. And as far as this season goes, you know, I picked UNC to win the ACC. I think they're a Final Four team. They have size, they have length, They have shooting, defensive ability, experience, as well as youth. And, you know, I think you have to take into account when you're looking at this season, the schedule that they've played. They've played five teams already in the KenPom Club 100. They've already played, you know, three teams in the top 53. They opened the season with two away games, which upper echelon, you know, blue blood program does that, goes to Wofford for the first game of the season. The loss at Texas, the loss against Michigan, those don't concern me at all. I think if you're a UNC fan, you've got a problem. I think it's because you're splitting hairs. I think Kobe White's phenomenal. I think Garrison Brooks is really coming to his own. And Cam Johnson looks like an All-American candidate at this point. And, you know, if I'm a Tar Heel fan, I'm pretty content with what's going on right now.
So is Little being used as the sixth man? Is that a good choice on the part of Williams?
I think so. You know, Mavs is, I think he's still trying to figure it out on the defensive end. He's a hustle player, so, you know, you see him on the floor sometimes, you see him rebound sometimes, get some weak side shot blocking. But as far as actual on-the-ball defense, he's not fantastic. And I think right now, Garrison Brooks is probably the better player defending the pick and roll and defending any switches that may have to take place out on the perimeter. And right now, I think Nasir is still kind of getting used to it, and I think you'll see the superstar that he is probably come January.
All right, Michael, you know I have to talk Virginia with you a little bit here. They've thrown out some different looks lately in these past few games against Wisconsin and Maryland. You know, they already have a two-game lead in the Big Ten standings and will probably win more Big Ten games than Rutgers will this year. We talked about, you know, you bring them up on your podcast a lot, Kia Clark, the freshman who's come in and you know, played some point and allowed Ty Jerome to play off the ball a little bit too. But what else has Bennett throwing at us that's different from years past?
You know, the Kei Clark thing is something, you're right, I hit it all the time. He plays big minutes for these guys. I think Ty Jerome looks like a lottery pick this year. I think he has surpassed Kyle Guy as far as the leader in that backcourt. And I think better off for Kyle Guy, who can just, the last game that they played in the Maryland game, Guy looked absolutely unbelievable in the first half. He just looked confident. It seemed like every time the ball left his hand, you knew it was going in. Ty Jerome, being 6'5", being able to play on or off the ball, being smart enough to know how to read screens against defenses, and, you know, he can play the off guard, and Kei Clark can handle the point guard duties just fine. He's played 36 minutes in a game, 38 minutes in a game. Tony Bennett obviously trusts him to handle the ball and handle those responsibilities. And then, you know, you got DeAndre Hunter, who is a top 7 pick in the NBA draft, who doesn't specifically need a ton of touches to impact the game a great deal. I mean, you get him 10 or 12 shots, he's probably going to score in the high teens because he's going to get to the line. He's going to hit whatever shots you get him. As far as this year, they were so good last year. It's hard for me to say that they're better this year. But I think if Braxton Key is able to figure it out and give them another option on the offensive end, this is a Final Four team. It's a Final Four roster right now. But if Braxton Clark figures it out, then this team is very dangerous. And I don't care what happened last year. That was last year. You know, some of these guys weren't here. You know, DeAndre Hunter wasn't healthy in that game. And that team got hot from three. You know, they made 12 triples. There's not a whole lot you can do about that. This year, this roster, the way they're playing, is the Final Four team.
And I'm all for that with the Final Four being here in my neck of the woods this year, by the way. But you mentioned Xavier Johnson of Pitt. Now we've mentioned Kei Clark, who was barely ranked inside the top 400 in his recruiting class. And, you know, sometimes it's not, we say it all the time, it's not always about star rating. It's always about fit. And both Johnson and Clark are great fits for what these respective schools do.
Yeah, he's a UC Irvine former commit. I mean,
yeah, exactly.
And now he's playing for a top 5 team in the country. He's playing 37 minutes a game.
All right, we just talked Virginia. Let's go cross state to Blacksburg. Buzz Williams, you know, he's you know, rolling a bunch of shooters out in the court, which is no different from last year. But, you know, they had a really weird loss to Penn State earlier this week in the ACC Big Ten Challenge. What are your overall thoughts on this team?
I get fooled by Virginia Tech every year. It's ridiculous. I put $100 on Virginia Tech against Kentucky last year, Carlos Spread, and that was $100 that I lost. The Penn State loss, it's on the road against the Power 16. Okay, that's a game you got to win. You know, Ahmed Hill does the Ahmed Hill thing. They finally get 30 minutes out of Kerry Blackshear. He plays well, and Ahmed Hill lays an egg, and they lose. You know, if this team if they get Chris Clark back, which I'm told that is a possibility at this point, and this Landers Nolly ridiculousness gets you know hashed out and he gets on the court, which I'm also hearing should happen by Christmas, then this team that's an Elite Eight roster, I mean, the amount of shooters that they have, plus Landers Nolly if he gets on the court, is probably the highest caliber of shooters in the country. I feel pretty confident saying that. And then if you get Terry Blackshear some help in the front court rebounding the ball with Clark, which we all know Clark, good rebounder, good defender, he can play that small ball five. If you get this entire team eligible and on the bench and on the court, then you know this is an Elite Eight Final Four potential team. And the problem is Terry Blackshear, he's got to stay out of foul trouble. And he's been able to do that in the last two games. But over the course of his career, it's just been, you never know what you're going to get out of him. At one point, a couple weeks ago, he had 19 fouls on the season and 21 total rebounds, which that's not what you want from your junior big man, especially when he's your only big man. So from a talent perspective, I think Virginia Tech's an Elite Eight team. As far as getting everybody on the court, getting everybody on the same page, and getting consistent play from Terry Blackshear and Ahmed Hill, it could be a different story.
But let's look at teams that were supposed to be elite. And my question is, was it all smoke and mirrors? Syracuse.
I just watched their game yesterday against Cornell at about, I don't know, 6 o'clock this morning. And they have talent. They're one of the most talented rosters in the ACC. When you think about Tyus Battle, who's going to play in the NBA, think about O'Shea Brissett, who's going to play in the NBA. You know, Frank Howard's finally back. He makes that team go. You know, there were some things that I liked yesterday. Tyus Battle has played, I think he has 73 or 74 points, something like that, in the three games that Frank Howard's been back. So, obviously, you know, Frank Howard has some kind of spell for Tyus Battle and how he plays. And, you know, the biggest thing is he gets in positions where he can succeed offensively. This team's always going to be one of the best defensive teams in the country. Ever since Mike Hopkins went to Washington, Syracuse has not been very good on offense. What I did like yesterday was O'Shea Brissett finally got his behind down the paint, and he went to work and had probably the best game of the season yesterday. You know, Elijah Hughes had a terrible game yesterday, and Syracuse still won. You know, Chukwu is looking healthier. Sidibe is finally over his knee issues. I don't think it's smoke and mirrors. I think it's just Syracuse basketball in 2018. They're going to defend you, and they're going to need their guys to hit shots. But I don't think that they're going to blow anybody out by 30. It's just not the way they are anymore. I think Boeheim's a good recruiter, and he can coach that zone, but limited on offense. I think they're going to turn the team. We all know what they do in March. But right now, I think Syracuse is what they're showing us right now. They are what they were last year. And as long as Battle stays hot and Brissett stays in the paint, and they run that 2-3 zone with all the length they have, they're going to be fine.
Let's talk about a team that probably will show up after January a lot more so, I think. Let's head back down to Tobacco Road and talk a little bit about NC State and what they're bringing to the ACC.
You know, North Carolina State was a team that I was pretty high on coming into the season. You know, they lost Sadiq Bey to a transfer. Well, not transfer. He just kind of decommitted and went to Villanova, and he's playing well there. You know, Manny Bates suffered a shoulder injury. Ian Spear plays one game and then leaves the program for St. John's, which is a complete mystery to me. This team's going to play fast. They're very guard-orientated. They're very deep. They are very similar to Virginia Tech in how they play, but they may play a little bit better defense. They have a stud at point guard in Markell Johnson. They have a stud on the wing in Torn Dorn. And, you know, C.J. Bryce was really good at UNC Wilmington. Devin Daniels was really good at Utah. And this is a team I really like, but if they get, you know, in trouble as far as foul trouble with their big men, then they could be in big trouble. If they get slowed down, such as they did in the Wisconsin game, they could be in big trouble. It's a style of play, and they don't have a whole lot in the front court. And I think that's they can easily be exposed in that aspect of the game. And Ethan Hatt, you know, he showed up the other day. He had a great game. Wisconsin beat North Carolina State. So I think it's a tournament team. I picked them to finish seventh in the ACC. I it's a team that I'm not going to put a whole lot of faith in making a deep run, because if they get cold from three, then it's probably all over.
Michael, let's go down south to Florida State, a team that I am a little bit higher on than some. I feel like they could maybe sneak into the top four. What are your overall thoughts? I really like the way they played so far this year.
I love this team this year. I've said frequently on my podcast that this, you know, I tried in the preseason not to let recency bias influence how I saw this team. And, quite frankly, I should have. I should have allowed that. Because the way this team is playing right now makes me think that run that they had last year wasn't a fluke. It was actually just the team kind of finally getting together, finally hitting their stride. And, already they've got wins over Florida, LSU, Purdue. They played Villanova pretty tight. And this is a really good team. Don't let people fool you into thinking that this is still Florida State playing defense. Florida State can score the ball this year. And, they're not as good on defense as they were, or maybe as well as Leonard Hamilton would like. And right now they are number 15 in KenPom. They're 6-1. They don't even have Phil Coker back, who was their leading scorer last year, to return this year. You know, MJ Walker has yet to play well, and they're the number 15 team in the country. You know, as long as these guys get back before ACC play and Walker starts showing his potential and Coker gets healthy, I agree. This could be a top 16 team in the NCAA tournament. And now I don't particularly trust Leonard Hamilton as far as making deep runs in the tournament. But, I trust that Trent Forrest is going to play hard. I trust that Terrence Mann is going to play hard. Phil Coffer, MJ Walker, they have a lot of talent. This is one of the deepest teams in the ACC. And, very undervalued. I had them at 6 coming into the season. And right now I have them at 4, just behind that top tier of Carolina, Duke, and Virginia.
I want to get into a pretty up and down team, Boston College, for a second. They lost inexplicably to IUPUI at home. Beat a pretty good Minnesota team that struggled with Sacred Heart earlier this week. Kai Bowman, obviously a really good player. And we also, and Winston Tabbs, another player, is a freshman who's really emerged. This is also one of those teams that, when you look at their roster, also makes you feel kind of old when you see Vin Baker Jr. and Chris Heron Jr. on the court. But what are your overall thoughts on the Eagles?
Boston College is a team I was a little higher on coming into the season. And, like you said, the IUPUI loss, similar to Virginia Tech, it seems like you're going to have one of those every year. They're going to lose to IUPUI, but last year, I think it was last year or the year before, they beat Duke in Chestnut Hill. So, Jim Christian is a very good offensive coach. They never play very good perimeter defense. And, I think the most surprising thing, the thing that I like about this team this year, is they played two games recently, one on the 21st, one on the 26th, against Loyola, Illinois, the Ramblers, and that Minnesota game you mentioned. Kai Bowman scores 12 points in both of those games. And if I was to tell you going into those games that Kai Bowman was going to score 12 points, you would automatically assume that they would lose both games. And they're actually games that they won. And I think that's a little bit why this team is maybe a little bit different. I think they're a little bit deeper on the perimeter. Now, that's not the downplay of the loss of Jerome Robinson, obviously, but I think the Tabs kid is a lot better than anybody anticipated, myself included. Jordan Chapman, he's not a player that everybody gets excited about, but he's one of the best catch-and-shoot guys in the ACC. I think Nick Popovich is playing very well coming off the bench. And Stephon Mitchell was breaking records as far as rebounding goes in his freshman season. Now he's, a year older. There are some of ballparks team, no individual player outside of Bowman is really going to wow you, but with Christian, if you have talented guards, this team could literally beat anybody in the country. And I'm going to say anybody in the country. If they get hot, Chapman, Tabs, and Bowman, they can beat anybody in the country. And I think they've showed that with wins against Duke and other teams in the last couple of years. But you're going to get the inconsistency as well. So if they get cold, especially on the road, this team's going to be in trouble. I picked them at 9th going into the season. I'm sorry, 10th going into the season. And I got them as an ACC, an NIT team.
Let's close out talking about Miami. They're a team that obviously they lost Juan Hernandez. More than likely, probably are not going to be playing anymore just with everything going on. But they're now on a three-game losing streak. I mean, the Seton Hall loss, I get. Seton Hall's a decent team. Rutgers is inexplicable and another weird loss to Yale. What's going on down there?
You know, it's it was a concern of mine coming into the season was their size. And, you know, I think you saw, especially in the Rutgers game, when Chris Likes was playing against Geo Baker, which if you've ever seen Geo Baker play, he's like a 6'4", 6'5 point guard. And he actually blocked a shot by Likes at the end of the game. What Likes had a pretty good look at three, or so we thought, until Baker rose up and swatted him. I liked them early in the year. This was a team that fooled me. And, you know, in the first three games, they played number 141, 159, 305, and they looked pretty good. Their ability to shoot the ball this year is better than last year, but then you lose Hernandez. And just like you said, I'm in full agreement that he's not going to be back. If I'm Miami, I do what North Carolina did, or I do what some other schools have done recently, and say, go ahead and prove it. I'm playing my guy until you show me something substantial. Now, I mean, what are they going to do? They're going to take wins away? I mean, who cares about that? I don't care about wins. I want to go to the tournament this year. And if I was Miami, I would play him, unless there's something else egregious that they know about. But when you take him off the floor, I got to think that Miami conducted their own internal investigation. And they must have found something, because he's not there. I agree. I don't think he's coming back this year. I think that Zindu is a very nice center, but he's also a very nice backup center. He's played some very good games this year. You know, he's currently averaging 12-9, but Miami's not winning now. Now they've lost three straight. And, you know, Zach Johnson's a little bit undersized at the off guard. Anthony Lawrence has been incredibly inconsistent his entire career. You know, Vasilevich has become the shooter that we always thought he would, but he's not the kind of guy that's going to lead a program to the tournament. You need Juan Hernandez. And I think with Juan Hernandez, this is a tournament team. But I think without him, it's just, there's too many holes. There's too much inconsistency. You know, Dengak is the guy that's filling in, logging some pretty heavy minutes right now. But he's 6'10", 195, still a, you know, redshirt freshman. The transfer from Wyoming, Anthony Mack, has given them basically nothing. And, you know, I think this team's in trouble. And I think this could replace Pitt in the bottom tier of the ACC this year. I think Pitt is better than we expected. I think Miami is a lot worse than we expected.
Oh, interesting. Michael, we've reached that point in the podcast where we always take a behind-the-scenes look at our guests. And one of the things we always like to touch base with people on is special hobbies and projects. Like Will is into building snowmen in July because he lives in Minnesota. So we want to check and see what you're into when you're not into sports.
Sports is kind of the ACC BR podcast and ACCBasketballReport.com are kind of my leisure time activity. Watching college basketball is kind of my leisure time activity. I work in an industry where I build multifamily construction projects, or basically apartments. And, you know, that's a 6-day a week gig. So when I get time is when I do ACC BR, and it kind of chills me out. I also really love to play golf. I live a few hours north of Myrtle Beach, so I get down there whenever I can. You know, softball, I like to go to football games, baseball games, college basketball games. The owner of my company is a UNC season ticket holder, and, you know, he gives his tickets away to his employees with pretty good regularity. So that's something that I'll be doing. But, you know, really, ACC Basketball Report is my leisure time activity, and I like to write for Slap the Song. And if I can find somebody to go golfing with, then I like to do that as well.
So do you have any favorite professional teams? You know, if you listen to your podcast, you have some affinity for Georgia Tech on the college side. Like I say, depending on the day, but do you have any pro teams you enjoy watching?
Yeah, being from Northern Maine and living, you know, 30 years up there, unfortunately, you know, I hate to admit that I'm a Patriots fan, because, you know, the 10% of Patriots fans that are just unbearable really ruin it for the other 90% of us that are pretty good people. I am a Red Sox fan, a G-Tech fan. I was an Arizona basketball fan for quite a while, but I think Sean Miller's kind of shown us his true colors, so I don't really follow them a whole lot anymore. I do like watching the New Orleans Saints play football. And now that Paul Johnson has left Georgia Tech football, depending on who they hire, I may, you know, get to like Georgia Tech football a little bit more. I cannot stand the triple option. I can't stand to watch it. I think it's a high school offense. And, you know, it just doesn't interest me at all. So depending on who they hire, if they run a pro style or a read option or something like that, then I might get back into college football. But, you know, I stick mostly to college basketball, NFL football. And then I'll, when I can get a Red Sox game on ESPN or whatever, I'll definitely watch that.
Interesting. That's a broad array of interest in sports, to say the least. I've got a former resident of New Orleans in my household, so sometimes I feel the pressure. Tell us where people can catch up with you, Michael, on social media.
On social media, I have a Facebook page, ACC Basketball Report. The only thing it really is a place to park my stuff on Facebook. I'm never on there. So if you're on Facebook and you're looking for content, ACC Basketball Report is there. However, any thoughts, in-game notes, recruiting, stuff like that, basically accbasketballreport.com, or you can follow me on Twitter at pecone36, which is PECONE36. And any writing, slapassign.com, gtswarm.com, or accbasketballreport.com.
Sounds good. Hey, our special thanks to Michael Hunter, who has been our guest on this episode of ACC Nation podcast. Michael is the owner of ACC Basketball Report. He just told you where you can catch up with him, and I encourage you to go to accbasketballreport.com. Make sure you subscribe to his podcast. Always good stuff. And thank you, Michael, for joining us. And make sure, like I said, that you visit his site and subscribe to his podcast.
I appreciate you guys for having me.
Quick note on ACC women's basketball in the AP Top 25. Notre Dame and Louisville hold down 1-5 again. Syracuse and NC State are at 12-13. And Miami at 21. We'll see how teams fared this week in the new poll. Be sure to check out the guys on Twitter. Will is at WillsWorldMN, Xavion at XAYVEON, and I'm at ACCTheQ. We're on Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, and YouTube at ACC Nation. On Facebook at ACC Nation Sports, and be sure to make us your homepage, accnation.net. Until next time.